Hello and welcome to another episode of Building Minnesota Rocker. My name is Ashley, aka Midnight, Director of Content on the team. We've got Brett Diamond, COO of Minnesota Rocker and Wise Ventures Esports. We're hanging out today with GodRx, aka Adam Brown, aka Jerome, which is now like your Twitter name, which is kind of like, is that your middle name?
Yeah, Jerome is my middle name, and I've had the nickname Jerome since high school. Once my friends found out what my middle name was, it kind of just stuck. And it got to a point during high school, my senior year, where my first name was just non-existent. I would go down the hallways, hey, Jerome. Even my teachers at some point started calling me Jerome. And since there's two Adams on the team, I had to pick, or like we decided on who would have like what name. Yes. And they're like, all right, we all know your name is Jerome, so we're sticking with that. And people on Twitter are like, oh, I can't tell who's who. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll just make it simple and just change it for everyone. And it's been sticking, and I'm loving it so far.
Yeah, no, we love calling you Jerome. I mean, I'll still call you Adam, too, but it's been awesome to kind of have,
I'll take
like,
either or.
Yeah, have your own kind of identity, I guess, on the team. Because, yeah. I mean, you guys are both Adams, but, I mean, Adam, Assault, Champs MVP, it's hard to take his first name right away.
I'll give him
that one. Yeah, he's got the edge on you for now, but, you know, how do you feel kind of how everything's gone as far as like you've been on this team, so you're part of the first ever roster of Minnesota Rocker. We just had our very first like home opening event almost 2 weeks ago. Talk about like your experience kind of coming onto this team, being new. I mean, it's a new team, brand new organization. Talk about like coming in here and just kind of how the first event went. We'll obviously get deep into the first event, so you don't have to go too far. But just talk about your experience so far.
My experience so far, brand new team, brand new franchising, all that stuff. I mean, it's been a dream come true for me personally. I mean, I've been playing for like 5 years, and I never thought I'd be at this level where I'm at now, especially with the players we have, all the talent we have on our team. And our whole roster, we never really hung out with each other per se, like at events, never play with each other to begin with. And just having like, just right away, just like feeling that kind of like brotherhood bond, like friendship already. Like we get along so easily and just gelled so quickly. And I think it helped very much when it came to our opening event. And it definitely shows. I mean, we went 2-0 during the weekend, but just the whole experience itself so far has been beyond incredible.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. And I think just like one thing that I saw kind of people were talking about when we announced our roster, because you were one of the first like three players that was announced. Our first core like player announcement was Silly, Assault, and GodRx. And when we brought you on, it wasn't that people were like, who the hell's GodRx? Who's this guy? Because you've been around. I remember first hearing your name in Advanced Warfare. I don't really remember like what team you were on, but I remember like just hearing that name and thinking that, does he mean RX like medicine, or like, and like thinking like, does he mean he's God of medicine, or like what? Like what is that? What
God
is
prescription.
What is GodRx? Yeah, God prescription. What does GodRx mean?
I mean, it really has no meaning to me at all. I mean, I've had RX like when I first started playing Call of Duty, I've gotten to sniping pretty much before I switched to competitive. And for some reason, naturally, but for some reason, RX like just sounded really cool to me. I mean, it has no meaning. I decided to throw it on my gamer tag, and it just stuck ever since. And when I joined this organization called Sinister back in Call of Duty Ghost, one of my first ever competitive like orgs, everyone on call on the 360 would change their gamer tags to what team they're on. And I tried switching to Sin RX, and someone already had it, and I was like, all right. So I decided to throw God in front of it, and it literally just stuck. Like I said, God RX actually has no meaning to it, because I know everyone says, like, God prescription. I'm like, sure, if you want to think that, but
whatever
it really has no meaning
to
me.
Yeah, oh, that's all. I mean, I think it's, a really cool name. I mean, it's unique, and I think that, like, it looks cool on Twitter because it's like at GodRx. It just feels
just
like
all
powerful.
In caps too. It's like
I think even the casters made a joke about you about like you being a doctor, or like easing the pain of the of the opponents.
Remember, was it Puckett Dad during their introduction?
Yeah,
he was
Puckett,
like,
that's what it was.
Last but not least, ready to ease the opponent's pain.
That's what it was.
I was like,
that's
I'm
hilarious.
Here for that.
Yeah. I think it's a cool name, and obviously like I've heard of you since AW, but then I don't know like what happened. Maybe I just got too involved with like all the other tournaments, and at the time like following Optic really closely, but I hadn't like heard too much about you until last year when you were teaming with, were you with Enigma 6 the whole year or mostly just Champs?
I was with E6 for the second half of the Pro League and Champs.
Okay. So yeah, so kind of like Anaheim, Miami,
yeah,
champs.
Pretty much around there.
Okay, and that, I mean, watching you at those tournaments, I was like, okay, this is kind of an underdog team, but you were clearing away for me, like the star of that team. And then seeing like your performance at champs, I mean, you had insane S&D numbers. I think you were like number two in S&D KD throughout the whole like league or the whole thing. So like I just had a good feeling about you, man. I was like, this guy's like doing it, right? Like, or he's like kind of climbing. Because if you've been doing it for as long as you have, like since 2015, which is when Advanced Warfare was, that's like 4 or 5 years, right, of like grinding. And yep. Now you're kind of really hitting your stride.
Well, and from day one when we started looking at players and Ashley was laying out like who we should target, you were always near the top of that list. And I remember us having a conversation where, you know, we had said to Ashley, like, who are the underrated players in the league? Like, who are the up and coming guys that we want to go after? And you were like the name that like jumped off the page immediately. She said, right here, got RX.
Yeah, like, because, well,
I remember it so vividly because the name
it's
stands
such
out.
It's such a standout name. But I think like there was obviously some recency bias just because you had played so well at champs, but knowing that you'd been around for so long too, like it's one thing when you just come out of freaking nowhere and you're just, you know, good, but to keep putting in work and to get better and better every single tournament almost, that's, I mean, obviously everyone's aim, but now you're finally like really finding your stride and now like on this team, and I knew like you were that, like you weren't really like a strong sub type or you weren't really like a super strong AR type, you're kind of a flex guy who can do whatever, you're super good at search, good sniper, like that's what you're look for in like that X factor type player who can, you know, really make those things happen and be the difference between like a win and a loss. Mm-hmm. So how, like, throughout your process, if you started during Ghost and started getting a little bit of traction here and there, what were those peaks and valleys like? To now, obviously, you know, things are going really well for you, but like what were the hard times like in your journey to here?
I mean, there was obviously ups and downs with like pretty much anything you do in life, right? I mean, it got to a point where I wasn't making any tournament winnings. I wasn't like on salary and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And my dad would tell me, he was like, listen, like it's about that time, like you have to actually get a job. And, like,
you're 21 now, right?
21, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but he was telling me like, listen, it's getting to that point, you have to put the controller down and get a real life job. And I would tell him, I was like, listen, just wait out a bit more, just hear me out, like it's gonna happen at some point. And then I think it was the middle of IW where I finally broke through and got on, it was Rogue Gaming with Johnny, Pander, and Nelson.
Okay.
And I first got my first like salaried org and like top amateur team, and then ever since then it's just been going from different organization, just keep on climbing to the top. But there's definitely been ups and downs. I mean, no grind is easy at all, but the dedication and working definitely paid off, I would say.
Yeah, no, it definitely did.
Well, and that's interesting, too, when we think about what Gary said to you guys when he was in town, and we just obviously released that in the docuseries yesterday. Yeah. But that story you just told, I mean, that's exactly what he was talking about follow your shit, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, fuck money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, that's it. Like, you just said it in a nutshell, that you were at this crossroads where, you know, the money wasn't there, but you kept with your passion, you kept working, you kept putting in the time.
Exactly.
And now it's paid off.
Yeah, and I even have like kind of like a sim. I mean, the last 10 years of my life, I was following my shit, you know, there was no idea that not only any of this would be happening, that I would be in this room here with you guys, but just that there was any money in it, whether it was creating YouTube videos or Twitch streaming. Like, I started my Twitch channel when they just put the sub button. Like, and that was like, and if you got a sub button, you were like, cool. Because then, like, people could give you money. And the idea of that was just so insane, right?
Yeah.
And especially now, I mean, you hear about, like, obviously, like, what you guys are making, you guys have benefits. Like, it's just so crazy to know that because of those early days where we're sitting there, like, you know, I had the same thing with my parents. They're like, you know, you got to do something. You got to finish school or get a full-time job or, like, do something. I'm like, just give me a year. I just started my Twitch. And I knew about the sub button. I was like, oh, this is the first time I could really, like, make money. Like, just give me a year. Let me try this. And then, boom, the rest is history, right?
Now it's a full-time job.
Right, exactly. So it's just, I mean, you never really know with these things. I think that, number one, though, letting your passion be the thing that, like, leads you through life is is always a, I shouldn't say it's a safe bet, but it's always a solid bet just because of your own like internal happiness and everything. So it's really cool to just have you on the team. And I think you've made impact plays since day one being here, not only with the type of person you are, but just on in game as well. You talked a little bit about like winning, obviously, the first two matches at the opening event here that we just had.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like going on stage for the first time? Because, I mean, like, elephant in the room, like, you're not the most popular player ever, you know?
Yeah. It's fair assumption.
It's like, I think there's like that star power and that potential is there just because of the person that you are and like how like your just genuine attitude and how skilled you are. But like, you're not the most popular player. And there was even comments, like, I don't know if you saw TP's tweet after the tournament, but he was like, you know, did anyone think that these guys that don't have these huge, huge followings yet would get like standing ovation, crowd cheering? And I mean, it's like, it's basically, you know, proof that the concept of franchising like works, because now you have this hometown crowd who's in, and they're in on the brand, they're in on Minnesota, and then they get to see you for the first time play, they get to see the plays that you make, and it's like, it's a little bit of an opening of a door for them to see you and really like give you that star power for the first time. Were you expecting the home crowd to be as vocal as they were, and did it like really, like it must have been different? I mean, because it went from every event where pretty much only Optic got chance to
the
now,
green wall.
To now you guys are like getting that star treatment. What was that like for you?
It was definitely a different, new experience for me because, like I said before, I was always like under the radar type player, and I was on those underdog organizations where if we played in our pool play matches on main stage, it wouldn't be like that filled up. Whereas here, we had packed Armory Stadium, and being able to play in front of that crowd, like hearing the chants and hearing all that for the first time, especially like for our team and like for me, like itself, like it was definitely something I'll never forget. And like, doing the walkouts,
that was
the
awesome.
Walkouts were amazing. And walking from the back area to go out to the front, like in the middle of the crowd, just seeing everyone stand up, just cheering you on, having the cameras on you, like it was definitely like,
gets you hyped up,
shit,
right?
Got me hyped up. And then walking on stage and just seeing everyone cheer, and then hearing the chants, like I said, it's,
there's flames and stuff. Were you just like, what the heck?
they told us about that. When I saw them, I was like, ooh, a nice little burst of warmth right there. I'll take that real quick.
There
but
you go.
I mean, definitely having the crowd backing. It was funny as well, as our first match against LAG, we were just sitting there hearing the chants, and they were like, "Is this how the green wall fell back then?" I was like, "Wow,
wow, this is nice."
Yeah.
And are you the type of player that when you start to like get fired up that way, do you carry that into the match, or do you kind of try to calm yourself down? Like, I feel like everybody's a little bit different. Like, some people channel it, and some people try to let it go.
Well, me personally, I feed off the energy. Every time I hear the crowd, like it's funny because Toronto, I made like some sort of play that I knew the camera got on, like from my POV, because I heard the crowd. Like, I literally just fed off that instantly because
it gets me hyped up
and gassed up.
Like, you got like a two-piece and you could hear the crowd, so you're like, oh, they're watching me.
Yeah, exactly. Every time I hear that, I'm like, yep, let's keep it going. Like, let's ride this momentum.
Yeah, nice. That's awesome. And that's like the whole aim with this thing. And I just like, as a homer, I'm such a homer, but like as someone who's from Minnesota who has been waiting for something like this, you know, pretty much, unknowingly waiting for this my whole life. It's not like I was like, I hope we get a Call of Duty team one day. Like, I had no idea that could be a thing.
Yeah.
But it makes just so much sense. And I think a lot of Minnesotans feel that way, where they're like, finally, we have like a team in Call of Duty or a team in esports that we can like really get behind. And I think that you guys are the perfect, you know, people for them to do that with, because you guys do have like good attitudes. And like you said, like, there's some debate, and we've seen a few different iterations in Call of Duty in the past where some players say, oh, team houses, you know, you start to get sick of being stuck with these other guys, and it's tough. But do you guys feel like, because you have like apartments and you're kind of coming to work every day here at this facility, does that help a little bit with that? Or do you guys, like, so far you're not really minding, like, we go to the gym together, we go have a meal together, we go practice together? Like, how's that vibe so far?
I mean, I don't think any of us have any problem living together at all. I mean, the vibes on with the team, like living together out here and coming to work every day, it's definitely helped, I would say, with like our chemistry and just seeing each other every day, going to work out together, play basketball together, go see a movie together, like just do everything. I mean, I lived out my past, because I lived out in California under Ghost Gaming for a bit. And I feel like that definitely helped.
Oh, they had you like in the hills, right?
Hollywood
if I
Hills.
Remember, they had like rented one of those crazy like pools.
Justin Bieber's old mansion.
Yeah, it was insane.
Yeah, but like I said, like just living with your team in general, I feel like it helps a lot. Like build that team chemistry, get the vibes going with your team, and just doing everything together. I feel like it definitely helps.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's really cool. And I think that's like how we're building like our staff and everything about this organization as well, is like there is that. I mean, esports, yes, you can do it from anywhere, but there is that face-to-face like chemistry almost that's kind of happening day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And I think like that can really help. And I think like too with the personalities that we have on this team, you hear sometimes about those, like, I mean, you saw it happen with Optic, like you have those very strong personalities and you're just putting them all in a small space together, you know, it's, you might not always get the result that you're looking for.
Right.
But with you guys, I think everyone seems so even keel on the team. Like, you're a pretty chill guy, and I think most of them are pretty relaxed. And then, I mean, you do have, like, the younger guys and Alex and Asim, but...
Like, no one has, like, really, like, a hothead or, like, an ego, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's always opening or open to listening and taking constructive criticism with each other,
yeah,
which is very important.
Yeah, exactly.
How's it been different? And I know it's only been a few weeks being in this building, but mm-hmm. How's it been different being in the same room together every day scrimming versus being spread around the country?
I would say it's different because like obviously you're face to face with each other, and like in between like scrim sessions, you can obviously like take off your headset and hang out and like talk with each other rather than just being online or like over a computer. But I feel like being in person definitely helps like build your friendships with each other, and just like people like to be in the same room just every day, like day in, day out scrimming. I feel like it definitely helps a lot with us.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I think before you got pro into Call of Duty, right, before you started getting like you talked about like salary through these orgs, did you ever have a situation where you had to work like a traditional job? Or I know like you done the monster stuff.
Haunted attraction.
Haunted attraction, yeah. But you were a monster, right?
Yes, I was an actor and did scaring, but that was like my only, my other job per se. That was during the month of October.
Like a seasonal.
Yeah, besides gaming and all that stuff, that was like the only main job I did, because
really?
That's something else I really enjoyed doing.
That's dope. I only did it for one fall, but I worked at Valley Scare, which is like a haunted attraction place here. It's like, well, you know, Valley Fair is like an amusement park, mm-hmm. but then, you know, they kind of turn it into a spooky place. I was doing security. And this was like, I think it was before Black Ops 2 came out. So it was 2012, 2013. I was doing like security. And so I would be the person who'd make sure that like the monsters, that's what we call them, was the monsters, that monsters didn't get touched, or that, you know, I'd have like, we'd have like pigs hanging upside down and kids would start like messing with it. So I'd go in with my flashlight and be like,
hey, quit messing around.
I don't know if you could imagine me as a bouncer. It was funny too, because I'd like started doing YouTube at that time, and I had like grown a pretty big following. Like, if this was when I just started like getting recognized in person, but I was behind this little foggy little curtain, and I would just like poke in like, hey, don't touch that.
Yeah.
Or I'd kick people out. Or if there was somebody who was too scared, if someone like you did too good of a job and they'd want to leave, I'd have to help them leave.
I was actually that kid when I, the haunted attraction I worked at, I went there when I was like 7, 8 years
old.
Oh,
dang. Yeah, that's young.
And my first time going there, I only got through the second scene, and I saw someone crawling, and I just lost it.
And so creepy.
I started just breaking down crying, and then like the person, like you said, like that had to come through and take me out. Like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I just didn't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
But I would I gradually built up to like going there every year, and then walking through consistently, and then it got to the point where it's like, I just had to be on the other side. Like,
yeah.
I have to do the scaring now.
I want to be the one.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah, my sister actually like worked there as well at the same time as me. So, and she was a monster on one of the outdoor mazes. And she said it's a tough life, but it's fun.
Oh, it's actually really more demanding than people think.
Oh, for sure. Because you have to be on all the time.
Oh, yeah. I have to constantly running around. I like the big water jugs. I would carry that to work every night. And then, like, it would get to the point where I just sit there and just pour it on me and just, like, just get drenched. But,
You're going to keep doing it now that...
It's actually funny because last October, I was planning on working there. I actually worked the opening weekend. And the Saturday night there, actually, in one of the scenes, I ended up chipping my front tooth.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I was like, when the work night ended, I was sitting there.
Did some kid freak out and just take a swing at you, or what?
No. So I was on a staircase, and I was on the corner of it, and I would jump off the railing, like, swing, and I held my my right arm too long on the bar, and I swung around, and my mouth went right on the railing.
Oh.
It could have been way worse than it did. It was like just a small chip on my left tooth, but I literally felt it shatter, and I was like, yep, that's gone forever. But after that night, I was sitting, I was thinking, because the game came out in the middle of October, and I knew how important franchising was when it came to grinding and playing with our team. So I sat there, I was like, I may have to sit the rest of the year after that one.
We'll have to chill. That's funny.
We'll have to put a no haunted house clause in your next contract.
No haunted house swinging and hurting yourself or anything like that.
I have been I've been kicked in the no man's land, unfortunately.
Oh, no. By a girl or a guy? Who kicked you?
Girl.
Wow.
And then I've been punched in the face. I've been stiffed arm. So
this is all in the haunted house, or are we now going outside
this is still in the haunted
house. Like UFC RX or what?
I could be.
No, I will say, I think I was probably 7 in one of those haunted house things, and I freaked out as a little kid, and I think I took a swing at one of the monsters. It was coming right at me, and just like instinct took
you
over.
You were like, no, get over.
Yeah, and the security guard had to come and
I would have been busting. Me out. Like,
Well, it's actually funny because it's not much as like a haunted house. It's a... it's a haunted trail, pretty much.
A hayride type thing.
Well, we have that too, but the main attraction is like a half mile hike through the woods. It's like there's 2 different trails you can go on, but
ooh,
on
that's
each trail
lit.
There's 13
Ooh.
Different scenes you can go through, and it's owned by like this company has like 80 acres of land, so they just built it out there, and it like grew ever since.
This is in Maryland.
Yeah, it's one of the top attractions on the East Coast.
Dang, that's dope.
Oh yeah.
So, going back to the event, talk about what that day was like. How were you guys preparing? You know, obviously the night ran longer than expected. Just like, what was your mindset? How did you stay focused as the night went on before you actually took the stage?
Yeah, well, the entire day leading up to it, we obviously got a good breakfast, woke up right on time, making sure we're nice and energized. And the entire day, we were just scrimming and making sure we were getting every little thing down before the big match. And then, like I said, we just scrimmed, I think, 2 series against some of the pro teams. And then once our match was getting closer and closer, we all have, like, the same, there's, like, this thing where there's, like, an hour left before you start playing. We all, like, stop scrimming. We, like, decide to go into free-for-all and, like, shoot bots. But just, like, plug in our music, just get in that zone. And just whatever kind of music gets us, like, ready, like, hyped up, we just sat there and listened to it. And then when the time came... like, we're already, like, just in the zone. We're just so excited to play. And then when the time came out and showed.
You nice. Get nervous at all, or is it just, like we've been waiting for this moment, we're ready, like, let's go do it?
I mean, I wouldn't say it was...
I'd be mad nervous.
I wasn't really nervous, because in my mind, it was... like, I mean, obviously, it was, like, the first man of the season, but in my mind, I was, like, it's another event. Like, let's get this rolling. I'm, like, ready to play again, ready to get back into it.
Yeah, true. That's probably way more level-headed than I would be. I would be like, I gotta go off. I gotta do it. I would impose a bunch of pressure on myself to like
start overthinking left and right.
Yeah, exactly. So it's good that you're probably just so conditioned with everything that you guys practice. It's like, you know, the maps that you play, you've played it 100 times over.
Oh right? Yeah, and I guess it would be different if you were like brand new to the scene, right? Because many of us, you have Cillian Assault, who won champs, they played on the big stage.
Yeah,
I got 4th at champs last year. I played on the big stage. I've been in those high pressure situations,
right?
Like, I know like what it takes to like stay calm and focused and just win, like win our series.
Yeah, for the LA Gorillas match, now obviously like there's the whole map number 2 where you guys went down 0-2.
I wouldn't say 0-2. We tied it up 1-1.
Well, you ended up doing
well
that.
Well said.
They ended up using Hardline and Piccadilly there. When stuff like that happens, I think it's important for us to clarify, and I think we will in our docuseries. We have some really great footage of this moment. But this wasn't a case of, like, you guys sat there and you're like, oh, he's using Hardline. Like, you guys went backstage, probably started taking, like, long, like, us in the crowd. We were like, what's taking so long? Did you have that point, too? Or kind of talk about, like, your perspective that moment when the refs made the decision they did. What was it like for you guys? And do you think that it it does help momentum-wise to go from what we did.
Well, the momentum-wise, I feel like it didn't really make a difference, because like when we officially like lost that map, we went backstage and like the whole bathroom break was going on. We were sitting there talking. We're like, listen, like maps 3 and 4 are picks. Like, we know we're down 0-2, but let's not like take that into fact
don't
at all.
Out.
Yeah, just don't freak out. Keep calm. Like one map at a time. And like I said, with the players we had, like I knew like we were still good.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got back on stage, and then we're all ready. We're all loaded in, like into the lobby. And then I look over to my left, and I see Aches have his headset off, and then two more players take their headsets off. I'm like, all right, what's going on? And then I think 10 minutes went by, and we were just still like very confused with what was going on. We had no idea like what had happened at the time.
So at that point, you have no indication that there's a controversy or that there was any sort of a
like problem.
Any of this is going on.
No,
right?
We had no idea until the ref came over, and then he explained. He's like, listen, like some player may have had a banned perk on. We'll keep you guys updated. Mm-hmm. And then like 5-10 minutes went by again, and then he was like, and then he mentioned they're either going to forfeit their map or they're going to replay it. And then I think another 5 minutes went by until he finally said, okay, they forfeit the map. We're just going to play with the third one. I was like, okay, sure. I mean, we had literally nothing to do with it. It was just something they caught, I guess. But, I mean, we do take that win, to be honest, tied up 1-1. I mean, it does suck for them at the end of the day. I get that. But, I mean, the rules are rules.
Yeah.
You have a banned perk on. It is what it is.
I mean, listen, that happens in every sport, every competition that mm-hmm. – you know, there are rules and there are
consequences.
Yeah, there are consequences for breaking the rules, right?
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
What's you know, that's what's in the rule book is mm-hmm. if you use a banned perk, you forfeit the map, and it's you know, it that's the process,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. And I think
every game, every weekend, in any sport, there are you know, there are penalties, there are calls that referees make, and
yep.
and some of them are even like
sometimes you're on the receiving end, sometimes you're on the losing end of it, and it just is what it is.
However, the league can't be picky and choosy, right? They have to set a precedent. They have to say if you use X perks, then X happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just unfortunate that, you know, it happened like obviously the first event, you know, but I think maybe this could help in the future, because now I think they're maybe checking, were they checking classes after that?
Yeah, they actually, they're really on top of it. They, the following, or on Sunday when we played again, they made sure, because they have certain operators that they use as well in the game,
right.
like the characters, and they made sure before every map started, we had to go through all of our 10 classes with the ref to make sure nothing was wrong,
sheesh.
And we had to go through our operator to make sure we had everything correct before we like he's like, all right, you're good to play.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, that's something that I think you know they're gonna hopefully keep making sure it goes smoothly so that
mm-hmm.
this type of thing doesn't happen. But at the end of the day, I mean. You have to, if the rules are set, you have to enforce them. I think to your point, like letting people know too, like the San Petrograde hardpoint wasn't your guys' pick.
Mm-hmm.
The S&D Piccadilly wasn't your pick either.
Nope.
But you guys had the next two maps come in, and you know y'all played lights out on them. So I don't know what. There's always going to be that debate, I think, and I think now next time we do play LA Gorillas, it'll be even more
nice
juicy,
rivalry.
Right? Yeah, we got some, and that's where this stuff is born, right? Is in these moments.
Beyond obviously the controversy with Map 2 mm-hmm. and the forfeit, what moments stand out from that match to you? Whether it's what you did personally in the match, or you know, or turning points.
I would say the turning point was I think it was like map 3 domination. It was like getting down to like, I think at the last like minute and a half, and it was actually on the CODcaster as well if you go back and watch rebroadcast. But there was a point where Assault got 3 huge kills to secure us like the good side on the map.
Yeah.
He got those 3 kills, and then that sequence just like popped off. Like if you look at like the kill feed was just all purple, like left, like just left and right. Everyone was just getting kills on the map, and I think that turning point literally like solidified like that map itself carrying over into the fourth map, which led us to winning the series.
Mm-hmm. I think Assault played so well opening weekend.
Yes,
I feel like you and him may have been like the statistical leaders. I know Alex had really good numbers
mm-hmm.
too. When you're this may be a good question, when you're playing, do these like KDs and these numbers and everything that you see come out after the match, do you guys like feel that during the game? Do you think to yourself, damn, Assault's going off? Or is it just like you're so focused on the teamwork aspect of everything that you're not really noticing like, oh wow, like he's going off or I'm going off or like.
I mean, I would say there is a couple of maps where you notice you're just crushing everything in sight.
Yeah.
But other than those like rare times, you really don't have like worry about that at all. You just worry about the team game. And as long as everything is flowing with your team, then the KD comes with it.
Yeah.
But it's mainly just the team aspect first.
Just all the teamwork that's involved with everything. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, that's where everything kind of ends up counting the most.
Exactly.
Whether you win or lose.
Teamwork makes a dream work.
Exactly. So maybe, like, the Gorillas came out maybe a little hotter than we anticipated, right? Mm-hmm. They hadn't been practicing that much. I think Aches hadn't started really practicing very much until
I don't think they started playing
until
like 2 months into the game.
Yeah, it's interesting. So was there some unexpected like, oh wow, they're actually decent, or is it just because I know like you guys have been especially practicing against like the Chicago, Dallas, Atlanta, like pretty much focusing on practicing against those teams because those are considered the best teams. And when you play the best teams, you get better. So when you have a team like LA coming in, is that maybe the difference where you're just not expecting the certain strategies that they're doing or the vibe?
I mean, don't get me wrong. They were a good team. Like, they came out and played their game. But first map on St. Petrograd, like, right before we started our series, there was a certain problem we had on the map where, we tried fixing in our scrims before, and the same problem ended up costing us first map.
Okay.
And I think it was more like a mistake on our end rather than
map. It seemed like you guys were rotating, but really maybe not. Like, they would just retake pretty easily.
Yeah, and our problem on the St. Petrograd was the third hard point going to the fourth hard point.
Right.
Because we would always trap ourselves, like, in the back of the third hill spawns.
Yeah.
And we tried fixing that, and that ended up costing us because they got, I think, 110 seconds on the fourth hill.
Yeah, it was a lot. And I think I mentioned it to Silly the next day. He's like, we already went over that. It's already fixed. It's fixed. And I'm like, all right, bro.
Like,
he was pretty upset about it. Like, like, when stuff like that happens, is it like a frick, man, we knew it? Like,
yeah, I mean, like I said, like, before the match even started, we knew what the problem was, and the problem ended up happening again. So, I mean, I can understand why he was, like, really pissed off about it.
Yeah.
Because, we all were.
Yeah.
But, recently with our on that map for our practice, it's been improving a lot.
Good. Yeah, it's awesome. I think, well, there's always like this meta that's moving, and like you never really know like how it's gonna go, especially, I mean, we have like big updates happening before the first event, and it feels like that always happens, right? Like,
yeah,
there's always some type of,
it's a classic,
it's name a more iconic duo, Call of Duty and updating before
two days before an event.
Yes, it's one, it's challenging for the people running the tournament because then all the software and hardware needs to be like re-updated.
Yep.
But did you guys feel like that really knocked you off of your game much, or was it mostly just everyone has to deal with these exact same changes? Let's just practice as much as we can beforehand and we'll see how it goes.
At the beginning, since they changed like the domination game mode, obviously.
Yeah.
When we were first playing, people were like, our team was like getting upset, like, this is unplayable pretty much. But when it got closer and closer to like event time and game time, I was like, guys, like, it's not going to change. We just have to play and grind.
I didn't even drop a dom, did you?
We did not.
Didn't drop a dom.
But I was like, listen, we just have to play it. It's not going to change at all. Like, let's just get it done. Let's learn the new way for it and just practice and just get better at it.
Yeah. And Toronto is another one of those teams that you guys maybe didn't practice a whole bunch right before this event.
We didn't play them because we knew we were going to play them at the event, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. And then also they're doing a lot of moving around with their starting five of who's going to be representing them.
Right.
They have a really interesting team strategy. We've talked a little bit about it on the podcast, but they basically have a full 10-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the starters are maybe being decided currently. It seems like it's the guys you played at the event. But
did think they did change one starting person.
Since
starting
then,
coach off, yeah.
Oh, no. Well, that's good for me to know because it's kind of hard to keep up with.
I think they subbed in Bance. I can't remember who for.
Bance
but
in for Cammy, maybe?
No.
Medals?
It might have been Medals.
Really?
Yeah.
Medals was going off.
He really was. He's actually a really good player.
So what's up with that, Toronto? We don't know. Never mind. Don't let them know. Keep doing you, Toronto. Live your life. but yeah, I mean, it's clear they're trying like a lot of different things with their lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So when you guys were getting ready to play them Sunday, the whole Battle of the North, we had imposed all this pressure on you guys. Like, you're at home. There's this battle for the North. It's going down. What was it like kind of playing them? And like, did you get a feel right away for like, okay, this is their groove, and we feel pretty confident, or are you never really fully confident until the whole thing's done and you've got at least three wins?
I mean, every match you go into, you always have to be confident that you're going to come out on top. I mean, when we came in, like, we knew we were the better team per se, because just the players we have and how well we've been doing online for our practice and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But we definitely didn't underestimate it at all. Like, we knew, like, they were, like, they had the caliber of players to come out and win and beat us. So we just studied up on film, studied up on them. Sorry, my words. And then we just took it one up at a time and then just came out on top at the end.
Yeah. No, you guys played really well. I mean, that search got a little messy, but sometimes, like, Classic was just going off.
Classic did have a good game.
Sometimes you just can't stop a player from going off.
No, like I say, you just had those games where you know you're crushing it, and he did.
Yeah.
So after that match, when we were all talking in the press conference room, you made a comment. You said, every team you've ever been on, they've always taken your sniper rifle away, right? Like, talk more about that. Like, what?
So every team I've been on, like you said, there's always been one person who thinks they can out-snipe me. I'm like, okay, you can have it. Sure, go for it. And then they usually don't do too good. And I was like during the maps, I would pick it up occasionally and like close around that with a sniper. I'm like, I'm telling you guys, you just gotta let me do it at some point. Mm-hmm. And then I never gotten the chance until this team. I remember vividly we were playing an S&D tournament when the game first came out. And when I told them, I was like, listen, I was like, give me a sniper this map. I promise I'll do good. I went like 14-1 with it. I was like, damn. I tried telling you guys.
I'll do it.
And then they were just like, all right, you're the sniper now. Just take it. I was like, thank you.
I'm glad we figured it out in the preseason.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, you were ripping it on Piccadilly, too. I mean, I know we ended up, like, losing or whatever. We lost, but didn't lose that map. But you were, like, ripping faces off with that thing. And that, I mean, that type of feeling, like, I can't even imagine. Like, when you get a snipe and you hear the crowd just freak out.
Yeah.
Like, you must just feel like the shit, dude.
Like, literally. Like, every time I got a snipe, I just heard the crowd. I was like, yep, that one's for you guys.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
So maybe for people who might be listening that aren't super familiar with the competitive scene, right? Or people that, like, that play Call of Duty the game but haven't necessarily, like, watched it in the past. Can you talk about why the sniper rifle is more relevant in search versus the other modes?
Yeah, so, I mean, for other modes, respawns, you could use a sniper, but it'd be more so, like, for, like, long-range maps, but, like, only for, like, your first life when you first spawn in to get that opening pick. As much as for S&D, you obviously spawn in with one life every time, and the way the maps are laid out, it's longer range for snipers. So if you have one life per round, it's easy to get a pick on the map rather than having like an assault rifle or a submachine gun to worry about. Mm-hmm. So it's just, that's why it's more valuable in S&D.
Like, it's just the cost benefit is higher,
exactly.
Right?
Getting that pick is so important. If you're able to get blood with a sniper, you're like, all right, we already have numbers.
Yeah, that's one man less to worry about. Now a 5v4, like, just like that.
Yeah.
And are you generally looking for the other team's sniper, or you're just looking for whoever you can pick off?
Just whoever you can pick off. If there is another sniper on the team, then obviously you have to worry about him, but you just play around him. Mm-hmm. But Like, if you've been a sniper for as long as I have, you start to notice, like, the angles, like, the crossfires, all that stuff, like, the timings on when someone's going to be there and all that stuff. But it just comes naturally.
Yeah. It's so awesome to, because obviously, like, the version that we're all watching on the broadcast and in the venue is, we can see the other enemies, like, through the walls. Mm-hmm. But when you're playing, you can't see any of that. So it's really interesting to watch, like, how you know where they are in, like, instinctively, or maybe this is based on call-outs in the game. But it's, like, you're sometimes so close, and you can, like, see that, you know, he knows he's going to maybe cross here. And it's pretty interesting to kind of watch that, like, unfold and everything.
The infamous COD timing sometimes, too.
Yeah. So you guys, are you putting, I mean, obviously now we aren't playing at London this weekend.
Unfortunately.
Sad face. We were going to, but then the schedule changed. Mm.
That's tough to take a whole month off between.
Yeah.
So we'd love to keep that momentum going.
Yeah, exactly. But I think this will kind of happen throughout the season, right? You'll have flip-flop type moments where, like, now we're not going to go to London, but we will be in Atlanta. And then, you know, maybe a team that was in London isn't going to Atlanta. There's going to be, like, different kind of rest periods. Do you guys feel like, oh no, now they're all gonna, like, get more LAN experience, and this is, oh no? Or is it more just like, let's, you know, we had a good opening, went 2-0. That was, I think, obviously kind of expected. I don't know if that makes it more difficult or not, that you're kind of expected to beat those teams based on the power rankings.
We were too, so.
Yeah, so you're like, we need to win these, basically.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as, like, future tournaments, now you're kind of chilling for, like, a week, go home, Valentine's Day, hanging with your lady, and then you come back and you go, like, digging your heels for Atlanta. Is that kind of the plan?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, even when I go home, we're still going to be practicing. Yes. But I feel like us sitting out for London is not going to really affect anything because we're not playing, but at the same time, we get to watch and learn what other teams are doing, too.
I'm going to be watching this weekend a bunch.
I'm not going to miss a single match.
Yeah, you want to be able to follow, like, the tendencies, see what everyone else is doing, see how the other teams are matching up, and now this is going to be the first tournament of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
So where we're actually going to see, like, how is that going to go down, who's going to get matched up versus who, because although the matchmakers, I think, did a really great job for weekend one, now there's a little more on the line as far as, like, if you possibly lose this match and then this match, then you go home with no points.
Exactly.
You know? That's a lot.
That's a long flight home.
That is
London,
a long
from London back if you're a team that goes 0-2.
Yeah.
And our opening match in Atlanta is against Paris, who obviously overperformed expectations launch weekend. So it'll be interesting to watch them this weekend and see if they continue to do well.
Smoked London, bro. And then they smoked OG, which
with OG, yeah.
I just made it up. But, like, I don't think anyone was expecting them to come out the way that they did, just based on how much, like, they hadn't practiced that much. Mm-hmm. So
I remember I was talking to Kismill and the team. They were living out in Paris for a bit, and they were getting practice against the European, like, amateur scene until 3 weeks before, like, the actual event.
Wait, so are they, like, based in Paris? Or they were?
They were, but I think they just moved out to California.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, still, I mean, then they're still on the West Coast situation, but anyway, it'll be really interesting to see kind of how that goes. I think, like, obviously knowing your first opponents at an event, like, that probably helps because you guys are okay, we know here's our first group, here's, like, our potential matchups, but obviously at that point you need to be brushed up on everybody, because if you get into the bracket and you obviously want to win the whole tournament, you're going to have to beat every good team there.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to beat the best to be the best.
Heck yeah, dude. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I don't have any, like, real hard-hitting questions for you. Just really want you to know we appreciate you here at the team.
Thank you very much.
If you guys haven't watched GotRx before, I don't know how much you'll be streaming. Do you stream, like, tens and stuff? Or do you stream sometimes?
I need to start to. I mean, I haven't streamed in a bit, but I will get back on that.
Practice and everything. Yeah. I'm sure, yeah. But follow him on Twitter, @GotRx. Keep an eye out for any of the content we're going to do with you guys. Now that we're kind of settled in a little bit, we'll be all under the same roof, bringing you guys a lot more content. So look for him.
On Instagram, @AdamGotRx.
There you go. Follow his gram. He'll be showing you his whole world, especially, like, when you're traveling through all the whole season and checking out all these places. So thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Do that, and then if you're listening on another, like, audio podcast platform, make sure to subscribe to that, rate us, give us a rating, whether that's a thumbs up or a 5-star review. Really appreciate you guys leaving those, and yeah, it's about all I got. Thank you, Brett, again, for always doing the podcast. It's always a good time. And
thank you, Brett, for being Brett. We appreciate you.
Yes, we appreciate you. Thank you, Brett.
It's nice to have us both on a podcast.
We've been dodging each other, so we're back. But thank you, Adam, again, for coming on. AKA
thank
Jerome.
You for having me.
And have a great rest of your day, guys. Thanks for
rock
listening.
On.
Watch over. Rock on.